You're listening to Leading and Learning. This is the place where we talk about practical leadership, theology, fitness, how to create winning habits, and so much more. My name's David Spell, and I'm a retired police officer, a pastor, a New Testament scholar, and a leadership coach. My goal on Leading and Learning is to help you live your best life. Thanks so much for joining us today. Welcome back to Leading and Learning. This is episode number 411, A Visit with an Early Church. You know, church history is fascinating. I think it's more applicable today forever because, you know, it's like every other branch of history. If we really want to understand where we're at today, we have to understand our history and where we came from. We never get away from needing to understand church history, and I think it's a very valid field of study. And even if you don't want to study it full time, there's just some great volumes out there on church history that would really help you understand where the church is going and where we've come from. And so as we look today, we're gonna look at pull a couple of passages from the book of Acts, and we're gonna look at some distinguishing characteristics of the early church, and then we're going to look at one in particular. You know, the early church is interesting because sometimes today you'll actually hear people say things like, man, I wished I could go back to the days of the early church. I wished I lived back. I wish we could go back to the New Testament church. And really, we're still in the New Testament church. That doesn't mean we always get it right, but by and large, and I've traveled, I've had the very distinct pleasure of visiting and preaching and ministering in churches all over the world. And for the most part, throughout the world, the church is doing a fantastic job. And the local church is still the hope for the world. People still find Jesus there. Marriages still get restored. People still find their purpose and destiny and find meaning for their lives in the context of the local church, in the context of a relationship with God, and then connection and community with other Christians. So I want to look at some distinguishing characteristics of the early church. And this actually is talking about the early church in Jerusalem. But you also see throughout the book of Acts that these were kind of the defining patterns, if you will, the defining practices really for the church throughout the world as it moved from being a Jewish, predominantly Jewish organization to a much more universal organization where people came from non-Jewish backgrounds as well. So here in Acts 2:42-47, it says, they devoted themselves. This is talking about new Christians. They've just had an influx of new believers. And it said, these new believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship. Well, you know, we can stop right there. I mean, that is really, I can't think of much more important in any local church. Great preaching and teaching and powerful community. I mean, that is what it's about. And of course, there's other things, but those two things right there, if we get those right, we're going to be in pretty good shape. It says, to the breaking of bread and the prayers, and all came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles, and all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings to distribute the proceeds to all as any had need, and day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. So these distinguishing characteristics, there was teaching and preaching, there was fellowship, they were celebrating the Lord's Supper regularly, they were praying together. This is all who believed were together and had all things in common. Now, this is interesting because you don't see this pattern repeated later in Acts. But here, There were obviously a lot of needs among the Christians there in Jerusalem. And so this practice of providing for each other was a very important thing. And today we see this worked out in churches through the giving of tithes and offerings, and then meeting real needs in the church and in the community. The church that I'm a part of and been a part of for years, we give a tithe on all the offerings and money that comes in on a weekly and monthly basis. And then we tithe off of that to, I don't know, it's 12 or 14 organizations in our community, food pantries, homeless shelters, things of that nature, all the way to international organizations like Compassion International and Samaritan's Purse and some missionaries. So we really want to honor, you know, what we see in the New Testament church. And I think that's kind of figuring out how we do that. And as they were being generous, talks about being generous, that's what we're still trying to do today. So we see these beautiful practices that really for 2,000 years have remained the same to some degree or other. Of course, it looks different. Doesn't talk about singing and worship here. And obviously that's a part of worshiping the Lord together. But we do see this idea of being together in Christian community and preaching and teaching and being generous and praying together. So these are powerful things. And then I want to move on and I want to talk about a specific church, one specific church. And there's many. Listen, Acts of the Apostles is such a fantastic book. If you heard me talk about it before, you know it's a history of the first 30 years of the church after Jesus was taken back up into heaven. These guys, after they were filled with the Holy Spirit on the day of Pentecost, they went, began proclaiming the gospel, but they weren't just proclaiming the gospel, they were planting Christian communities throughout the world, wherever they went. And the Apostle Paul was ultimately the foremost of these guys. We see him planting churches all over the Roman world. It's an amazing thing, and it's a great pattern for us to hold on to today. The movement that I'm a part of, C3 Church Global, we've got, I don't know, 500 or 600 churches around the world. Other great movements throughout the years have seen the importance of church planting. Listen, we can go and do evangelism. We can go and do things for the poor. We can go and educate. We can go and build hospitals, and those things are all good. But if there's not a local Christian community to receive the new believers, we're just wasting our time. So as much as possible, we want to follow the New Testament pattern of planting good, healthy, solid Christian communities in all the cities that we can minister in. So I'm going to read a passage from Acts 16, and we're going to look at Paul planting a church in the city of Philippi. Just a little background. Philippi was a Roman colony, which meant that it was the same as being in Rome. Even though it was separated from Rome, it was considered a part of Rome because it was a colony. So all the citizens there were Roman citizens. And this is, again, it's a big deal. They had the right to vote. They didn't have to pay property taxes. And it was actually founded for mostly former Roman soldiers. The thought process in Rome was we don't want to have too many former soldiers around the city because if they ever got mad at something that the government did, they could unite and overthrow the government. So they would form these colonies throughout the Roman Empire, and they made the incentive, again, by saying, hey, it's just like being in Rome, and it's probably cheaper here, and you're still not having to pay taxes. You can vote. You've got all the rights of a Roman. And so that's what Philippi was. And so Acts 16 says this, from there, we traveled to Philippi, a Roman colony, and the leading city of that district of Macedonia. This is in modern-day Greece. And we stayed there for several days. And it's interesting. When Luke says several days, you know, he might actually mean a few weeks. That's kind of one of the little literary patterns he uses. On the Sabbath day, we went outside the city gate to the river, where we expected to find a place of prayer. We sat down and began to speak to the women there. Now, this is interesting because it tells you that there was no synagogue in this Roman colony. You had to have at least 10 Jewish men to start a synagogue. So that tells you there wasn't a very strong Jewish presence here in Philippi. And so the pattern was Paul and Silas and their team thought, well, let's go out by the river. That is a common place for people to pray. And they began to speak to the women that were there. And the first woman, or the first convert in Europe, was a woman. Paul tells us, and we find out a little bit further down in this passage, that it was a businesswoman named Lydia. And she was evidently the one leading this group of prayer, this women's group of prayer. There's no indication she's Jewish, but she was probably what we would call a God-fearer. She was interested in the Jewish faith that was very beautiful to a lot of people, this idea of one true God. And so she's probably out there leading this women's prayer group. She hears Paul and Silas share the gospel, and she comes to faith. She commits herself to Jesus, and her business was she sold purple cloth and was evidently very successful because she was able to invite Paul and his team to come stay with her, and she hosted the first church in Philippi. She had a house that was big enough to become the first meeting place for the Philippian church. And then Luke lets us know in Acts that not only Lydia, but all the members of her household were baptized as well. And we don't know what her marital status is. It doesn't say. Maybe she was divorced. Maybe she was a widow. Maybe she'd never been married, although that would be unusual in that day and time. But we do find out that her whole family, maybe these were her kids, maybe these were servants, people that worked for her, but her entire household came to Christ and was baptized. And I find it fascinating that the first convert to Christianity in Europe was a woman. And not only that, she was a successful businesswoman. And in allowing her house to be used for the gospel, she would have some type of leadership role as well. I mean, that was the way it worked. Whether there's no indication she was the pastor, but she would have obviously had some type of leadership role since her house was the one that was being used. Don't go away. We will be right back. I wanted to let you know that this episode of Leading and Learning is brought to you by my book, Peter and Paul in Acts. We're talking about the Acts of the Apostles in this episode. We're looking at the early church in Acts, or at least just taking a small snapshot of it. But I encourage you to check out my book, Peter and Paul in Acts, because we do a deep dive into Acts. We look at the apostolic ministries of the Apostle Peter and the Apostle Paul. These were the two most eminent apostles and leaders in the early church. Don't be mistaken, there were plenty of other great leaders as well, but these were two of the foremost, especially during that first 30-year period of the early church. These were the two men who had the most influence throughout the world, planting churches and leading and just doing such a great job to share the gospel. So check out Peter and Paul in Acts. It'll give you a great introduction to this amazing book. It's a great book to read along with your own Bible study of reading Acts. And it'll also give you a bit of an introduction into the Gospel of Luke, because the same person wrote both books. And so by introducing Acts, I also wanted to introduce Luke as well. So we'll give you a great bit of a background on the Gospel of Luke and the book of Acts. So make sure you check out Peter and Paul in Acts. Click on the link. You can actually read a little bit for free, but by all means, get a copy and keep it with you and read it the next time you read Acts. All right, so Paul just mentioned Lydia. She was the first convert, and so really the first church member here in Philippi. And she, as we said, she hosted the church, let them use her house. But then the next convert that Paul mentions was a slave girl. Well, that's quite a contrast from Lydia. It says that she was, in Acts 16, it says she was possessed by an evil spirit that allowed her to tell people's fortunes. And Luke tells us that she made her owners a great deal of money. So I imagine she would, people would come to her, they'd pay for a session, just like you might do with a psychic today, and she would probably go into a trance, and it says that the spirit that possessed her would tell people's fortunes. People paid good money for it. And her owners were rich because of her. And as she is there following, she sees Paul and Silas and the team. And it's quite fascinating because it says that she began to follow them at the distance, saying that these are men of the Most High God. These are men who are speaking the truth of God. And it's very interesting because she's not a Christian, she's not a believer, but the spirit inside of her recognized who Paul and Silas and their team were. And so she said, these men are preachers and men from the Most High God. And so this happened day after day when Paul and Silas would be going to preach in different parts of the city and to talk to people and share the gospel with them. This slave girl would follow. And one day, Paul finally, he just got enough. He turned around and he spoke to the demon and he set her free. Now, this is one of those kind of funny things that in the year 2023, we hear about somebody getting set free from a demon. We think, well, she was just mentally ill. She had some other issues. Listen, I've been all over the world. And you don't see a whole lot of demon possession in America. I've seen some. But this is a very common thing in third world countries, poor countries, countries where they practice a lot of idolatry, sorcery, and occultism. It's a very common thing. They don't have any trouble at all believing in demons and knowing that demons can come in and possess people. Here in America, you know, we're too smart for that. But the reality is the devil would love it if you don't believe in him. But either way, Paul sets this young woman free from whatever was holding her in bondage. And then that set off a riot. Paul and Silas got beaten and thrown into jail. So not a really good end to that conversion story, but that's what happened. So they're in jail, and we don't hear about the slave girl again. But the way Luke positions this story, the indication is she became a member of the church as well. Some scholars have even speculated that the Philippian church purchased her freedom and brought her in as a new member of the Philippian church. So we've got Lydia's household. Now we've got a slave girl. And again, we said, man, what a stark contrast that is. You've got successful businesswoman to a woman who's probably been used and abused for years. And now she's set free and she's brought in to be part of the Christian community as well. And that's the way it works. You know, Christianity is not for, you know, one particular socioeconomic class of people. It's for everybody. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever would believe in him would not perish. But then, as we said, Paul and Silas are in jail. They've just gotten a good beating. Now they're in stocks. Their feet are in stocks. And it's just not a good day. Definitely not a pleasant time for Paul and Silas. And we find out that Paul and Silas, as they're in jail in the middle of the night, they're in there with other prisoners, and they begin to pray and sing. They begin to pray and worship. They're singing hymns to God. And what a powerful testimony this is, that after they've just suffered this humiliation, this painful beating, their backs are probably torn open, and now they can't even, you know, move really. Their feet are in stocks. They're probably chained up with their hands. And now they're in jail and they start worshiping. And it says that in Acts 16, there was an earthquake that shook the jail where they were. Really, the foundations of the jail were shaken. The chains fell off. The stocks fell open. The doors came open. And the jailer, the Roman guard, probably a retired military man. As we said, this is a Roman colony, and then most of these guys were retired soldiers. So my guess is he was probably a Roman soldier, maybe retired, and now he is the jailer. He's keeping the jail in Philippi, and he knows, he sees, he's heard the earthquake, he sees the door standing open. When he looks out his window and he assumes that all the prisoners have escaped, he comes running outside carrying his sword, And when he realizes that probably all the prisoners have escaped, he starts to kill himself because he's going to be responsible. And Paul and Silas both, they cry out. They say, look, don't do yourself any harm. Everybody's still here. And the jailer at this moment, and we don't know if he's kneeling before Paul and Silas or standing or what happens, but he asks this famous question. He says, what must I do to be saved? What a fascinating question. Maybe he's heard Paul preach. Maybe he heard him singing. He's got enough knowledge to realize that he needs to be saved. And the famous answer is, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and you'll be saved, you and your household. So this first century civil servant and his family became the next members of the church. It says that they took, at that hour, they took Paul and Silas into their house. He cleaned their wounds. He treated them. Paul and Silas taught them some more about the gospel. And then it says the entire family, he and his household, the same language from Lydia, he and his household, so probably his family, maybe some servants, they were all baptized in Jesus' name. And now they too became part of the Philippian church. What a great start to a plant, you know, church plant. You got Lydia, she's got some resources, so that's always good to have people with resources. You got a good place to meet in her house. You got a slave girl that they probably had to buy her freedom. Now you've got a civil servant. You got kind of a, you know, middle-class, blue-collar kind of guy and his family. And and there's others. Of course there's others, but that gives you an idea. These are the ones that Luke highlights in his book. But now the question becomes, who's going to lead this church? It can't be Paul and Silas. They've been arrested, and once they're released from jail, they're asked to leave. So you've got this new church with a bunch of new Christians, so who is going to lead the church? Who's going to be the pastor? Who's going to be the guy who's going to look out for these new Christians? And this is where it gets real interesting. This is why you got to read very carefully when you read Acts. The language changes because Luke has been part of this team. He says, we went there, we do this, we did that. So he's been a part of the team. But now, when Paul and Silas leave, instead of him saying, we left, it says they left. And so Paul and Silas left town, but Luke transitions back to the third person, making it very clear that he stayed behind in Philippi. And this goes along with church tradition as well, that Dr. Luke probably pastored in several locations, but he was here in Philippi for probably a few years until somebody else could be found to be the pastor. And this is, Dr. Luke was a good choice to be the pastor. He's one of the most educated of the New Testament writers. His two books, the Gospel of Acts, or the Gospel of Luke and the Acts of the Apostles, make up almost 25% of the New Testament. I mean, he was a prolific writer. He was truly as a pastor. When you read his Gospel and you read the Acts of the Apostles, he writes as a pastor. He tells stories that share important lessons. His writings make it clear that he was much more than just, you know, Paul's doctor and assistant. He was truly a pastor and cared about his people. And so you read these stories that he wrote, these pastoral stories that are still relevant to us today. He was a spiritually mature leader who would have been the perfect pick to be Philippi's first pastor. Now, of course, the Philippian church became very influential and were always very near and dear to Paul's heart. They were one of the churches that supported Paul financially on his subsequent missionary journeys. Their attitude was, you know, you came and brought us this incredible treasure of salvation. The least we can do is to support you financially and to help you on your way. And so they supported Paul. They had a great reputation for living out the gospel. And if you want more information on this incredible church, there's actually a little four-chapter letter, a little short letter, take you about 15 minutes to read, written from Paul to the Philippian church as a thank you note for one of the many different offerings that they provided for him to help him continue his missionary journey. Well, I'm going to stop there. I'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the early church? What are your thoughts on the Philippian church and living out the gospel? Because that's ultimately what we're talking about. This episode was titled "A Visit with an Early Church." What is your picture? What is the snapshot you have in your mind when you think of an early New Testament church? Go to davidspell.com, leave a question or comment in the comments section for today's post. While you're there, make sure you sign up to get my free newsletter so that we can stay in touch. Well, friends, thanks for being with me. We'll see you next week on Leading and Learning.
Oh, 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 oh,